All right, we're beginning on the Mishnah and Ayin Aleph and Aleph. The Mishnah is a continuation of the previous Mishnah. It says, when you sell the field, what does and does not come along with the field? So here the Mishnah continues, says, lo et abur, velo et agat, velo et shovach. So none of these items are included in the sale of the field. Not a cistern, not a press, not a dovecote. Ben charevim, ben yeshuvim, whether they are destroyed already, meaning that they're not in service, or whether they are still being utilized, neither way are they included in the sale. So this should be familiar to us, because the Gemara already quoted this Mishnah a number of times, that Rabbi Akiva says that you have to purchase for yourself a way to get to these items. So when you sell a field, the field is sold, and you maintain the rights to certain of these items, but then Rabbi Akiva says you got to find your way onto the field, because now you don't have access to the field, because Rabbi Akiva believes, as the Gemara concluded earlier, that mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher. And since you sell in a generous manner, you sell all rights, including the rights of access. So now when you want to access these items, you've got to purchase for yourself, so the rights to get there. Now, even though Rabbi Akiva believes that you're mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher, that doesn't mean that all of these items come along with it. You could have said in Rabbi Akiva's shita, why is it that you need to purchase a way there? It's because you sold in a generous manner. Well, if you're selling in a generous manner, why aren't you including all these other items in the sale? You should have included the boar, the dot, the shovach, all the other items that we mentioned. Why aren't they included? So there's a difference when it comes to selling what you are articulating. Then we're going to sell you are selling the most amount or the greatest amount of what you've articulated. To increase the amount beyond what you have articulated, that's not ayin yafa anymore. That's saying that you're basically giving up rights that you have not sold. So when it comes to the items here that are significant enough to be excluded from the sale, they were not included in the sale. You never articulated them in the sale. Therefore, we don't say ayin yafa. On the other hand, where you said I sold the field, and that would have included access rights to whatever you left behind, then we say ayin yafa. You sold the entire field, and you didn't leave yourself access rights. So that's Rabbi Akiva's shita, ayin yafa. Chamim say you don't have to purchase for yourself a way in because they believe ayin ra'a mocher. A person who sells in the most miserly fashion, and therefore he retains for himself the rights to access the items that he left behind. Rabbi Akiva agrees if you put in extraneous language that says chutz mi'elu, excluding all these items that are naturally excluded from the sale, you didn't have to write it in the contract, you could have just written the default contract, and these would have been excluded. Now that you add in that language, she'eino tzarich lekach lo derech, that gained you the additional rights of access that you wouldn't have otherwise had. So the extraneous language gives you more rights. For the chachamim, obviously the extraneous language doesn't do much because you already have those rights. So we say shufra de shtaro. That improves the quality of the shtar. It's the what we've said until now, where if you say something that you have anyway, it's just good for you if any arguments or difficulties arise later on. And you end up in a beit din that may not know the halacha perfectly. At least in this way, you are covered by that which is written in the shtar. Machran de acher, if he sold them to other people, so here are the transactions in reverse, which is that in the first transaction in the Mishnah, he was selling the field, and then these items were residual in the sale, and they got kept by him. And then he, according to Rabbi Akiva, didn't have access. According to Chachamim, did have access. What happens if he sells the items and retains the field? So here he's selling the boar, the dot, the shovach, but he's maintaining the rights to the field. The buyer does not need to buy access rights because the seller sells in the most generous manner. That means that when he sold these items, he obviously sold him access to these items as well. The Chachamim say just the opposite here. It says, mocher v'ayin ra'a mocher. When he sold you the items, that's all he sold you. Access rights? That's an extra cost if you want to get in there. So now, b'med v'ayim amurim, where is this all true? B'mocher. When we're talking about transactions. Aval minotein matana. When you're talking about gifting, notein et kula. Then he gifts everything. Meaning that when a person gifts, they gift in the most generous manner. Because the person there is giving in a willing manner. He's not involved in any transaction. And notein et kula, in terms of what that means or what's included in the kula, so if you sell the field, we know that all these items are excluded. You give it as a matana, now we say everything's included. What does it mean, everything is included? So if you look in the Rashbam, he says, Umiyu, im yesh ma'ot pasadeh, ot vuat rusha, she'ena tzricha lekarka. If in this field there is money sitting in the field, there is produce that has been harvested, that is laying out in the field, that doesn't need the field anymore. Anything that is obviously not included in the sale of the field. So for instance, when the Tana listed out items that are not included in the sale, those are not the exclusive items that are not included in the sale. Anything that doesn't belong there, or doesn't have anything to do with the karka in particular, also are not included in the sale. So too, over here, when it comes to a matana, the matana is only going to include the items that the Mishnah mentioned. These are items that the Tana had to tell you about because they have some connection to the field. They have some reason for you to believe that they could have been included in the sale, yet they are excluded. Then by a matana, we will say they are included in the sale. But items that have nothing to do with the field, they are not going to be included in the matana. So when you give something and there's produce lying in the field, that produce is not going with the field. It has nothing to do with the field, doesn't belong to the field. You're not getting that. Obviously, a person who's receiving a gift is not getting these items either. So that's an important corollary or qualifier to this idea of the gift. When we say the giftee receives everything, it means that he receives anything that you would have thought in the Mishnah that should have gone with the field, but the Tana tells you don't go with the field, those items would be included in a gift. But things that are not even mentioned in the Mishnah, things that have nothing to do with the field, they are not going with the matana. And that's not considered to be a withholding of anything because the guy's gifting him a field. He's not gifting him all the items that are found inside of the field. So that's as far as even the Chachamim here would agree that a person gives in a generous manner. Achim, shechalku. Achim that divide up the property, zachu b'sadeh, zachu b'kula. They take possession of the field, they take possession of everything. So now this seems to be a continuation of the Mishnah, which says that we're talking about Ayin Yafa, which is that whenever you gift or you give something, you give it in the most generous manner. So here, where the brothers are splitting up the property or the estate, and they take the field, he gets everything in the field, because the other brothers or whoever it is giving it to him in the most generous manner, and therefore he gets everything that's there. That would have been what you thought should have been. But if you look in the Balei Tosafot, the Rashbam says something similar. He says, "V'yesh lamar d'hocha la mishun ayin yafahu." This has nothing to do with ayin yafah. Ela mishum d'rotzim listaleg ze mizeh. What this has to do with is complete separation of ownership. Is that when the brothers split the estate, they want to make sure that they have a clean break between them in terms of ownership. So it's not that the reason that you get everything in the field is because they're giving to you in a generous manner, but rather when they give you the field, they want to separate ownership. Separate ownership means you get everything that is included in this field, and he'll get everything that's included in the area that he took. But not because of Ayin Yafa, but simply because we want a separation of ownership. Obviously that has residual impact in terms of how we look at this, because that has impact in terms of what you leave over afterwards, which is if you need something. If you need access, and you split something in a way that you need access through this other individual's field, then you might have kept that access. Because here, it's not about Ayin Yafa, it's about utility, it's about splitting of ownership. But if you need something, you're not going to give up that right, because you need the access there. Which brings us to the Rashbam and others over here who note that as far as, when it comes here to the situation of the brothers splitting it, as far as access to the derech, access to getting there, that happens to be a machloket between Rav and Shmuel. And that machloket will persist over here. That's not governed by the situation. You can see that in the Rashbam when he says, Zacha b'kula, afilu bor begat v'shovach shebesadeh kana. He gets everything. Shekevin shezeh notel sadeh achat, v'zeh achat kenegdo. Since each one of them takes a field, listeleg zeh, mishel zeh nitkavnu. Like the Balei Tosfot, he says, they're trying to create a separation in the ownership. You could say that he does have a way in there like Rav, like we explained earlier back on Samach Amud Aleph, because he wants to live in the field the way my father lived in the field. And the way my father lived in the field was he had access to it. So therefore I have that right, which is Tachar Abotecha Yubanecha, that's what we quoted the Pasuk back there. Or you could believe no, that when he gave up the rights, he gave up all rights, and those rights included the right of access, and now he'll have to get himself right of access. So what the Rashbam says is that this is not influential over whether he does or does not get a derech here. That's still subject to the machloket that we saw earlier as to whether when brothers split the property back on Samachay, there was a machloket between Rav and Shmuel as to whether you get a derech or you don't get a derech back then. So that machloket will persist over here as well, even though we're saying that he gets everything. That when you split the field, you get everything. Everything means in terms of ownership rights, that we clearly define and delineate that you get this, I get this. Access, which is a right, that might still be up in the air because of this principle, which is that you want to use the field like the way that your father used the field. And therefore, that issue will still be outstanding, or that machloket will still be something we have to deal with, independent of the fact that the Mishnah says you get kula, that you get everything. Everything doesn't really mean everything. It means everything excluding maybe these rights that might be residual. A machzik b'nechse ager, someone who takes possession of the property of a ger, hechzik b'sadeh, hechzik b'kula. You take possession of the field, you get all of these items that are mentioned, all the items that are excluded from a sale. If you're taking possession of the property because the ger passed away, and now it's hefker, when you take possession of the sadeh, you take possession of everything that is in the sadeh. So now, this is interesting, because if you remember before, we had the principle when it came to the ger, and you took possession of a field, you didn't get possession of the adjoining or adjacent field if there was a meitzar, if there was a border between them. Your ability to acquire was limited by what you acquired. And we mentioned over there that the reason for that, in all likelihood, is because you don't have a dat makneh. That you don't have a party that's giving you or granting you ownership. You are simply taking ownership from the hefker. That's the lacking part of a transaction with the ger, is that there you are unilaterally taking possession of the property. The ger has passed away. There's no inheritor. His property is all hefker now. So what you take possession of is only going to be exactly what you take possession of. You can't take possession of more because there is no money involved to say that I bought all of these items and therefore one kinyan will help me for everything. There is no dat makneh. There is no grantor of the property to you. And so therefore, all that you're doing is working from your side. And so you can only acquire what you come into contact with, what you make a kinyan on. So therefore, the Gemara said earlier that when it comes to a fields or multiple fields of a ger, if you took possession of one, you don't necessarily get the other field. So the Rashbam says, well, wait a minute. Isn't that how we explained in the previous Mishnah the reason that you don't get the charuv or the shikma or these items over here is because we consider them to be sadeh acheret. We consider them to be a totally separate field. Well, if that's the case, how come when you take possession of the property of the ger, if you're getting this sadeh, who says you get the other items with it? Who says you get a vineyard? Who says you get the fruit trees and the sycamore and the carob trees? Why should all that go? They're all separate fields. So how are you able to acquire them if they are separate fields? So Rashbam distinguishes between the cases and he says, Nehi nami de bet sadot chashvinen l'sadeh v'charuv amurkav. Even though we consider them to be two different fields, mi'olekam meitzar b'nehem. There is no border between them. And that's the key element, meaning that in the previous sugya, when we said, when you acquired one field of the ger, you didn't get the other field of the ger, that's when there was a border between them. When something sat between them that created a natural separation between the fields, that's where we had the question, whether taking possession of the border helps you. If you take possession of one field, does it help you for the other field? And then we said they were separate entities, and you can't get possession. Over here, where you don't have that separation, then you have the ability to acquire the multiple sadot, even though you take possession of only one sadeh. So even though you take possession of the sadeh, you will get the charuva murkav, or the stana shikma. You will get possession of them. So in essence, what happens here is interesting, which is that in a mocher, a seller transaction, the dat makneh actually works against you in this case. Normally, dat makneh helps you because he's able to give you more than you would have otherwise acquired through a small kinyan like this. Because he's granting you rights. And he says, I'm selling you all these items. You make a kinyan on one of them, he can grant you all of them. That's what Shmuel said. You take possession of one field, you get all 10 fields because the makneh is giving you the 10 fields, assuming that you paid the money already, then you get them. So therefore, dat makneh usually helps. In the case of the ger, we're lacking that, and so it's harder for you to take possession of multiple properties. In this instance, it actually works the opposite way. The dat makneh over here says, when I sell you a field, I withhold all of these significant items. So since the person selling you the field normally withholds all of those items, when you buy it, all you get is the field and not the other items. By the ger, when you lack that makneh, it's actually going to help you in this instance, which is that there's nobody to withhold these items. Because you're taking possession of it, everything's going to come along because there's nobody who is trying to pull the rights the other way to challenge your possession over here. And so that's how it'll work, actually, the opposite, logically, of what we've seen until now, that makneh helped. Over here, it actually will help the possessing of the ger's property rather than be to your detriment. And that's what the Rashbam says, the lack of a border here makes it that you're able to acquire all of these items together. Hamakdish et ha-sadeh, hikdish et kula. Person who sanctifies, gives the hekdeshes field, he's makdish everything. So the assumption being here that the Tanakhama's position is that a person who's makdish is makdish ba'ayin yafa, and therefore he'll have the same din as a notain matana, rather than a mocher, than a seller. You could have looked at a person who is giving something to hekdesh in one of two ways, a gifter or a seller to hekdesh. So over here, if you look at him as a gifter, then he's given everything. Rav Shimon Omer, Makdish et ha-sadeh, lo kdish ela et ha-charuva murkav et ha-stana shikma. It seems that Rabbi Shimon is on the other side of this picture, that someone who gives to Ekdesh is a seller. Therefore, he includes nothing in the sale. He only includes the field, with the exception of these two items, which we will see in the Gemara what they do with this. But the basic idea is that when you're talking about these items, a charuva murkav and ha-stana shikma, they need to nurture from the field itself. So the problem is, if he gifted the field to Hekdesh, and then these trees are nurturing from the Hekdesh, that means that they become Hekdesh because they are growing from the property of Hekdesh. So they become Hekdesh not because he necessarily wanted to be Makdish them, but he's left with no choice now because they are now in the property of Hekdesh and utilizing Hekdesh's property in order to grow, therefore they become Hekdesh naturally, not necessarily because he wanted to grip that along with Hekdesh, but that's what happens because he was Makdish the field. All right, so now Gemara says, Maishna mecher umaishna matana. Why is there a difference between transactions and gifts? I mean, the Mishnah clearly says that the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva argue when it comes to a transaction. When it comes to a gift, everybody agrees. So why is everybody on board when it comes to a matana? Perish Rabbi Yehuda ben Nekusa, lifnei Rabbi. Yehuda ben Nekusa, before Rabbi, tried to give explanation for this. Ze perish, vze lo perish. This one articulated it. This one did not articulate it. Mar says, hi, ze perish, vze lo perish. You're telling me that one of them articulated it, one it didn't? Our case in our Mishnah is, ze lo perish, vze lo perishu. Our Mishnah, neither of them articulated anything. One said it was a transaction, one said it was a gift. We had no information in the Mishnah that indicates that he excluded or didn't exclude items. The Mishnah is telling you what the default scenario is in these two circumstances, a circumstance of sale, circumstance of matana. So Rabbi is saying back, or whether it's the Gemara, Rabbi is saying back to Yehuda ben Nekusa, his explanation doesn't hold water in terms of the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't give any differentiation between the sale and the matana. It just says sale is this, matana is this. It doesn't say that they articulated anything different, didn't exclude anything. So what is he talking about? Ella, ze hayelo defaresh, veze lo hayelo defaresh. No, you misunderstood. It wasn't that the Mishnah actually articulated anything different. It has to do with what were the obligations in these situations. This individual should have articulated it, and this individual had no obligation to articulate. And you can read this in one of two ways. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here brings one way, which the Rashbam also brings as a second explanation, which is, Ein darko shel koneh lichtov kach ani koneh. The buyer doesn't write in the contract, this is what I'm buying. El mocher darko lichtov kach v'kach ani mocher. Rather, the seller dictates what's going into the contract. It came into a dictate. And since he didn't articulate it, then he loses out. Person who receives a gift, he can't go in there and dictate the terms of the gift. Put it in there because he gave it for me. May as well give me everything now. So the problem is, what is the obligation of the parties here? In the case of a transaction, the buyer does not control the situation. But because he doesn't control the situation, he needs to make sure whatever is in that contract includes what he thinks he's buying over here. Because if he doesn't do it, then the mocher is going to dictate because the mocher is the one who controls the situation. So what the Chachamim say is basically, the mocher is ba'ayin ra'a mocher. So you as a buyer, if you do not include in the contract any item, by definition, the mocher is going to withhold that item because that's his right. He's the dictator of the situation. And then by gifting, you can't say that. By gifting, everything is in the hands of the gifter. And therefore, the giftee has no ability to say anything. So in that case, we will favor the giftee's rights and say that the gifter is the one who has to dictate what's happening over here. If he doesn't, we assume he gave everything. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom differentiates in this case, which is, who is the party of obligation that needed to speak up in this case? Here he's saying that by the transaction, the buyer needed to speak up, because the seller is the controlling party. And if the buyer wants something to be included in the sale, he better say something, because if he doesn't, the mocher is going to just say, I kept everything for myself, I'm not giving you any more than the field itself. On the side of the gift, the gifter is the one in control. The giftee can't even speak up. He doesn't have the ability to say anything here because he can't demand more than the gifter is giving. So therefore, we'll assume the gifter gave everything. And now the gifter's got to dictate what is excluded from the sale. Because as far as the giftee is concerned, he can't go in there and demand or ask what is or isn't coming in the sale. Since it's all in the hands of the gifter, what we're going to say is everything goes unless you withhold it, unless you show us or articulate for us that it's not going. So that's one way to say it. Who's the obligation of articulation on? In the case of a sale, it's on the buyer. In the case of a gift, it's on the gifter to articulate. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom, and it's quoted by the Rashbam as being also the Shita, the Rabbeinu Hananel. On the other hand, the way that the Rashbam explains it is, Zayolo Lefaresh is, Notei Matana, Kevin the Ragili Tein B'ayin Yafa, a gifter, since he gives in the most generous manner, Emita the high lab b'ayin yafa yahiv hayelol lefarish ulishayir bor v'gad v'shovach. The underlying assumption in a gifter is that he's gifting in a generous manner. So since that is the assumption, the gifter now needs to articulate if he's not being generous. The assumption is you're being generous, you gave everything. Now you want to change that? Make sure that you articulate that, because we're going to assume that you're just the greatest, most generous guy in the world and giving everything. On the other hand, avo mocher, Zuzei Anzu. This is a recurring refrain. If you remember back in the Gemara on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Bet, the Gemara itself said it there by the case of Talyua, when they hung him up or they strung him up and he sold the property he was selling under duress. The Gemara says that all sales are under duress. People only sell property because they need money. They don't sell because they're willing. They sell because they're under duress. And we saw it back in the Rashbam on Mem Amud Bet as well, that he articulated a similar idea, that sellers are always under duress. Given that, the seller is going to give or sell the most minimal amount that he has to sell, because it's duress. He just needs money, and therefore he's going to withhold as many rights as possible for himself. Therefore, he only sells, unless articulated otherwise, he's going to sell the most minimal amount. So the way the Rashbam articulates it is that the gifter is generous, therefore the default is everything, unless he withholds. By a seller, he is not generous, he's under pressure to sell, he's only selling because he needs the money, therefore he sells in the most minimal fashion, unless it is identified or articulated otherwise. In the end, it's interesting, he focuses on the seller, the Rashbam. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rabbeinu Hananel focus on the buyer. So here, the seller has control, and therefore the Rashbam says the seller is either generous or not generous, and that will determine the default situation. Rabbeinu Gershom says you have to look at the buyer, or the recipient of the gift. The buyer can articulate because of the nature of the transaction. He's paying money. He can dictate what's going to be or not included in the sale, because the mocher is not going to do it in his favor. But the recipient of the gift has no ability to articulate, and therefore he gets everything unless stated otherwise. But when the Rabbeinu Gershom says we look at the recipient of the gift or the buyer, then once we know what their abilities are, then it gets flipped back onto the seller or the gifter to determine what happens. So in the end, they're almost saying the same thing, just taking it from a different approach. The Rashbam, when he says that someone sells something, he sells in the most miserly fashion because he's selling under duress, the same thing is true from the buyer's perspective. The buyer is purchasing over here, and since he has money, since he can articulate, then we assume that the seller is selling the least amount until the buyer dictates. So same thing with the gifting. The Rashbam just says the gifter just gives the most generous fashion, so everything's given. We say, well, the recipient of the gift can't say anything. Since he can't say anything, we assume that the gifter gave in the most generous manner. So again, in the end, it comes back to very similar ideas, which is a question of whether you focus on the grantor or the recipient in these situations. Right, so that's what the meaning of Yehuda ben Ikusa is, but explains the difference in the Rabbanon's position between Mecher and Matana. So now the Gemara says, Ha'ud Amar Lahu, this individual who says, Havu Lei Laplanyo, give to so-and-so, Beita de Magzich Mea Gufe, a house or a property that holds 100 pitchers, 100 barrels in it. So here he's gifting, it sounds like he's on his deathbed, he's giving away his property, he says, give to such and such a person a house that has this. Ishtakach, Tavimachzik Me'avesrin. He only had one property. And that property held 120 barrels, not 100 barrels. So now we're unsure as what to do. Did he mean to give this house? Or did he mean something else? Or he was just saying something that he didn't mean? Samar Mazutra, Me'amarle, Me'avesrin Lo'amarle. He said a house with 100, he didn't say 120. So the way the Rashbam reads it is that he means that you only get 5/6 of the house, or whatever it is. You only get a portion of the house. He said 120, you got 100, so you get 5/6 of this house. I'm sorry, he said 100, and the house 120, you'll get 5/6 of the house, the other 6 will go to the other parties or the other inheritors. That's the way the Rashbam reads it. You could have read it, that when he says here, he said 100 and not 120, it means you get absolutely nothing, that you're not entitled to anything. The Ritva over here, I think, indicates that Mitzvah lishma ledivrei amet. There's still a mitzvah to at least carry out the instructions of a mate. And therefore, even though you might have thought over here to say, it's 120, not 100, get nothing, we still would like to, at least in some way, accomplish what the mate indicated over here. Given that, we would give him 5/6 of it and not take it away completely. Rav Ashi Amar, milotz nan. Doesn't our Mishnah say, b'med dvarim amurim b'mocher? This whole idea of looking about how exacting the person is only a case of a transaction. When someone's gifting, he gives everything, he does it in the most generous manner. From there you would conclude that when someone gifts, they gifts in the most generous manner. So it's over here, when a person gifts something, they gift in the most generous manner. Now, the truth is that that may not have anything to do with this at all. Because gifting in a generous manner just says that if I have an object, and included in that object are other items, that I say not only to get the object, to get the other item. Over here, what is the ayin yafa? He said 100, and now you're giving him more, 120. The extra 20 had nothing to do with what he gifted. That's not ayin yafa. That's meaning that I'm taking more than he said. So what you have to say over here is that ayin yafa has a broader meaning than simply, when I get a certain object, I include everything included in that object. But ayin yafa also means the equivalent of something like emor ma'at v'aseh harbeh. That sometimes people gift and they just say a small amount. They don't want to make it sound like a big deal. In the end, it's much bigger than they articulated. And so ayin yafa would also include that type of terminology, which is that, yeah, he said 100. Either he was bad at estimating, or he said 100, but it really was 120. He wanted to be generous. He wanted it to be a nice big gift. He only said 100, but it turns out to be something even bigger than 100, so that the guy's surprised to the positive side. Since there's only one property here, either he erred in his estimation, or he said something, but it was really bigger. He didn't want to make a big deal. He wanted to sound like it was a little gift, but it turns out to be a big gift. And that's the idea of ayin yafa in this context, different than the ayin yafa that we've been using until now. All right, now, makdishat ha-sadeh, hikdishat kula, that's the Tanakhama, and Rabbi Shimon says, you make these to feel and nothing else, but you get these two items as well. Amar Rav Huna, afagav d'amur Rabbanan, even though the Rabbanan say, akoneh shnei ilanot b'toch shel chavero, harizeh lo kana karka, someone who purchases two trees from his friend does not get property with those trees. Machar karka, if he sells property, b'she'er shnei ilanot, and he keeps or maintains for himself two trees, he kept for himself two trees. Yeshlo karka. He gets property. Vafilu le Rabbi Akiva. Even according to Rabbi Akiva. So this references a Mishnah and a Gemara later on in a Mocherta Sfina, the next Perek, which is that when it comes to trees, trees have certain rules about them, which is that if you sell one tree, then you've only sold the person the tree, you haven't sold him the land with the tree. If you sell him three trees, then not only are you selling him three trees, you're selling him the tract of land that includes all those three trees in it, because you've given him something significant enough where it's already becomes like a field of trees and no longer just trees. So you have one tree is an individual tree. Three trees is a field of trees. It's an orchard already, and you're going to get property with it. two trees happens to be a machloket later on in the Mishnah and in the Gemara as to whether property is included or not, whether or not property is included. That's the background to what we're speaking about. Now, Rav Huna says, even though the Rabbanon say, if you purchase two trees, you do not get the land with the karka. So that's this is the assumption that this is the Chachamim's position, that when you buy two trees, it's no different than buying one tree. You don't get property with the trees. So now he says that despite that fact, when you actually turn it around and you flip it the other way and the person sells his property but maintains for himself the trees, over there we don't say that. You should have said in a reflexive view, which is you sell the property, now maintain for myself two trees, that's all you maintain for yourself. You maintain two trees for yourself. Since you maintain two trees, you shouldn't get any property. But Funa says that's not true. That when you buy, you get two trees, no property. When you sell the property and you maintain two trees, you keep the property along with the trees. There is not an equivalence in this manner. The question, of course, is why? Why is there no equivalence, or why is there a change in the way that we look at this? So now, this is all in the shita of the Chachamim, which is that in the position of the Chachamim, since a person does things in a miserly fashion, so that way, if he is buying trees and the person selling trees, the person sells him the trees and that's it. But when he is selling property and keeping trees, he also sells in a miserly fashion and withholds karka for himself. That's the way that the Rashbam explains it, that this has to do with the shita of the Chachamim, which is mocher ba'ayin ra'a mocher. And so therefore you can see the two sides of the transaction here, which is that when he buys trees, that's all you get, because the seller's not giving you land. On the other hand, when you sell the karka, you maintain for yourself the karka that you need for your trees because you sell in a miserly fashion. And therefore, what Eliba de Rabbi Akiva, who says, Ba'ayin yafa mocher, then you would retain karka rights, or you would get karka rights. And that's why he's saying it in the Shita de Rabbanan. Because when you buy two trees, according to Rabbi Akiva, in this thesis, that would mean that Rabbi Akiva says, you sell in the most generous manner. It means the person sold you the trees and the karka with it, and therefore, of course, you would get karka. That's why he's saying it's Alafa Gavdama Rabbanan. It's only in the Shita of the Rabbanan. Even though in the end, he says, Vafilu de Rabbi Akiva, that when you sell land, and you maintain two trees, so that, according to the Chachamim, is understandable, because you are miserly and you're selling. So you keep your two trees plus the land. For Rabbi Akiva, who says you always sell in a generous manner, you would have sold all the property and not left yourself anything in the property. So then, even Afilu Rabbi Akiva, he says now, Domer, mocher ayin yafa mocher, that when you sell in a mocher ayin yafa, ayin mila gabe bor vidot, that's only when you're talking about other items within the property that you maintain yourself, because they do not weaken the land, they do not detract from the property. Since they do not detract from the property, the seller doesn't think about keeping himself a derech to get there, because the person who these items are found in his property is not going to be upset about these items being in his property, because they're not doing anything to the detriment of his property. When you leave yourself trees in the property, that they utilize the fields and the property around it, meaning that you're really detracting from his property. If you didn't leave yourself rights, then get your trees out of here and leave. Because he's not going to want to leave you rights there to utilize his property in the way that it ruins his ability to utilize his own property. All right, so now I'm going to just continue, first of all, with the Rashbam's view, and then we'll come back and see that many Rishonim disagree with the Rashbam's view. So going to the Rashbam, everything here has to do with Ayin Ra'an, Ayin Yafa, and therefore the Rabbanan's position, we understand now, is all about Ayin Ra'a, and therefore when you buy two trees, you only get two trees. When you sell the land, keep the trees, you keep the land for yourself. But he's saying, even according to Rabbi Akiva, who says, Ba'ayin Yafa, when you sell off the land, you keep for yourself land for the trees. The reason is because if you don't keep for yourself the land for the trees, you're not going to be able to keep the trees there because the guy's going to say to you, take the trees out. Now the Rashbam is Lashita To. He actually said this earlier in the Masechta as well. He says that doesn't mean that he has a right to tell you to take your tree out of there now. All it means is that when the tree is done, reaches its end of life, you are done. So unlike the situation, and this is what he says in Rabbi Kiva Shita before, that if you buy trees from an individual, and you get property with it, according to Rabbi Akiva, because the person sells to you in a generous way, that property gives you the right, not only to keep the trees that are there now, but to plant replacement trees in the future, because you own the space. That's what the right of the karka does for you, is gives you rights to replace the trees when they die. So then the Rashbam Lashitato continues that thought here and says that what's going to happen here is if, according to Rabbi Akiva, when you sell your land and you keep the trees, if you don't keep yourself land, you'll be able to keep the trees there now. But when those trees die, you will not be able to replace them. You will not be able to put in new trees in that piece of land. Now, the difference between the buyer and the seller is, we have this principle, and the Rashbam notes it, is that people do buy something for layom, or buy something for peirot. When you buy something, you're willing to either rent it, some people lease something, buy something for a very short duration, or they buy it only for the production of the tree that is there. That is normal. But when someone is selling, we don't necessarily say that. Because there he's not a buyer. He is a seller and maintaining rights. When you sell and maintain rights, you maintain the full rights that are involved with the tree. So here you come along and you buy two trees. We're not going to say that karka necessarily comes along with it. You bought the trees for the duration that they're going to be there. You bought the trees for their production. That's what you bought? That's what we assume. We don't make any assumptions about you getting long-term holdings in this karka. That people do. People are willing to lease cars. People rent cars and they return them in the end. So until here, you're buying a tree and you return it in the end. But when it's reversed, the transaction, and you're selling, when you're selling the land and maintaining the trees, we're not saying that. There you intend to maintain not just the tree, you intend to maintain the rights to utilize this property, because you're not a buyer now. You are the one who owned the property. And so when you own the property, you maintain that rights of ownership in the property. That's what you're trying to maintain for yourself. And that's why there's an unevenness in the transaction. So that is the Rashbam Shita. Now the, you can see here the Baal HaTos on the Amud Aleph and Amud Bet argue on this thesis of the Rashbam. To the easier part of what they argue on, they say what Akor Yilanech doesn't mean you wait around and take the tree out after it is died and now you don't replace it. Akor Yilanech means you're going to pick your tree up and you're out of here now. I'm not leaving you the tree here. You're not staying here. This tree is draining my land. Oh, you left yourself a tree? Yeah, I thought you wanted to leave it here temporarily until you got a place to put it. Now you will have a place to put it. Out of here. I don't want the tree in my land. And that's the way that he views it. And many of the Rishonim view, not like the Rashbam, that Akor Yilanech, and this again, the Tosafot argued on the Rashbam earlier in the Masechta about this issue as well, which is that when it says Akor Yilanech, it means literally, take your tree out of here right now. That's it. You have no rights to leave the tree. And you gotta take it out. That's number one. Number two is, he says that the Rashbam's view here, that this has to do with Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah, so whether you leave land or not, is totally irrelevant, and is wrong. Because how do we know that? Because when it comes to three trees, if you go and purchase three trees from an individual, you do get karka, you get land, even according to the Chachamim. So this can't have anything to do with the machloket about Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah, because even according to the Chachamim, we say that you sell by Ayin Ra'ah, so by one tree you don't get land, two trees you won't get land, but then why do you get land by three trees? If it's always by Ayin Ra'ah, it should be the same din. The fact that you get land by three trees shows you this has nothing to do with Ayin Ra'ah and Ayin Yafa. It has to do with what comes with trees or doesn't come with trees. I mean, that is it classified as an orchard, or is it classified as a single tree? Do people buy trees with that land, or do they buy tree only with land? And that's the whole issue here. And so therefore, the Baal HaTosafot are unwilling to accept this idea that the issue is Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra. So the Baal HaTosafot say that they don't see that as being the machloket over here. V'lo mitayin Ayin Yafa. This has nothing to do with Ayin Yafa. It's a totally different issue. They're rather that the issue is whether you get land or don't get land with trees. Totally independent. And what it's saying here is, even though normally you don't get land with two trees, that's only in the case where you are buying trees. But when you're selling your land and you're maintaining the trees that are there, then you do get to keep land, not because you're selling behind Yafa, but rather because the person is going to leave himself karka in those situations. Because he knows that if he doesn't leave himself karka, that's going to impede his ability either to keep the trees there, or it's going to impede his ability to replace them later on. That means he's not leaving himself anything of significance. And so that's why, in a case where he's shir shnei lanot lefanav, yesh lo karka, and that's what the Gemara says here, even according to Rabbi Akiva, who normally says that you would sell in a generous manner, nevertheless, over here, the din has to do with the trees, and not to do with Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah. It's revolving around whether trees get karka or don't get karka. So now, even though, again, normally when you buy two trees, you don't get land, when you sell and it's in reverse, we are going to grant you the land, or we're going to assume that you're going to keep for yourself the land that is associated with it, because we don't want the buyer of the land to come in and tell you, take your trees out. So given that, you're going to maintain for yourself rights, because nobody wants to be in a predicament where they're getting their trees thrown out of the property. So that's what the Reis says over here. Lekach zakoku l'sheir karka l'nikata ilan. So then why does he have to leave over property for the sustaining of the tree? Migo the nachad l'shiur, m'sheir nami karka l'zruas aviva ilan, v'lita acher b'imkomo l'kshi avesh. The intent here, or the reason he leaves over the property from himself is because he wants him to keep the trees. He doesn't want you to force the guy to force you to take the trees out. So you maintain property here because you don't want your trees kicked out as soon as you sell the property. But then, since you already maintained that right to keep your trees there, along with that, you got the right to plant underneath the tree. You also got the right to replace the tree later on. All of those are things that come in to help you out over here. But by a buyer, you can't say that. A buyer doesn't have such amigo. You can't say, well, I bought the trees, therefore I bought with the trees. Well, I'm going to include this, I'm going to include that, I'm going to include this. The buyer isn't the dictator of what is put in the sale. The mocher is the dictator of the sale. So here, in a case where you're the buyer of the trees, you get exactly what you bought, the trees. Nothing more, because the mocher says, I'm not giving you any more. This has nothing to do with Ayin Yafar and Ayin Ra, according to the Ri. But in a situation in which you are the seller, so over there, the seller wants to sell, he sells the property to the guy. He doesn't want his trees kicked out, so he maintains the property so he doesn't get his trees be forced out. Once he already kept the property because he didn't want his trees to be kicked out or uprooted, then he gets all these extra bonus rights with it, which is that once you keep the property for the reason of not having them be thrown out, you also get to plant vegetables there, you get to replant afterwards in perpetuity, you get to put trees there, you get all these rights that are thrown in together with that. And that's the chiddush of Ravona. Ravona's chiddush is exactly that, that not only do you get the rights to maintain the trees, you get rights to continue to plant trees. Your rights extend beyond just the here and now. Because you are the mocher, you have the ability to maintain rights. Once you maintain a right, you say, migo, that you retained it for this purpose, you also retained it for other purposes. So that is the different ways to explain between the Rishbam and the other Rishonim, and the Balei Tosafot, especially over here, which is that the Rishbam believes that this revolves around Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah. As the Balei Tosafot say, it has nothing to do with that. It's a totally different din that deals with trees and karka. And you have to deal with the mindset that is involved in trees and karka. And that's why there's a difference between buying and selling. Now, it's not our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, amakdish et asadeh, lo ikdish el charuva murkav v'stana shikma, v'tana yala. And on that, we have a qualifier. Amar Rabbi Shimon, matam. What's the reason behind my position in the Mishnah? Since they draw their sustenance from a field of Ekdesh, if you believe that you leave behind residual property, then it's clear that they were deriving their sustenance or their nurturing from your own property. In essence, if Rav Huna's din is correct, then I don't understand Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says you're makdish the field. When you makdish the field, the trees go. Why do the trees go? Because the trees are nurturing from Hekdesh's property. You just told me, Rav Huna, that when you sell a field and retain trees for yourself, not only do you retain the trees, you retain the land underlying those trees. So if that is true, then what's Rabbi Shimon worried about? You're makdish the sadeh, and you maintain there two trees, the stana shikma, the charuva murkav, because they're so significant, you keep them for yourself. Well, if you keep them for yourself, you're also going to keep the property associated with them. You keep the property associated with them, they're nurturing from your property, not the property of Hekdesh. Then why does Rabbi Shimon say the trees go to Hekdesh because they're nurturing from Hekdesh? It's just not true. So the answer is that clearly Rabbi Shimon does not hold like Rav Huna. I mean, obviously that's not starter because Rav Huna is an Amora and Rabbi Shimon's a Tana. But the point is that Rav Huna's din doesn't necessarily apply to Rabbi Shimon, or Rabbi Shimon doesn't think Rav Huna's din is correct. Now, the Gemara before said Rav Huna's din applies to the Chachamim, V'afilu Rabbi Akiva, and it also applies to Rabbi Akiva. The afilu Rabbi Akiva is not from Rav Huna's statement. That was the Gemara adding it in afterwards, saying that Rav Huna's din could even apply to Rabbi Akiva. What the Gemara is going to say now is, Rabbi Shimon damar ki Rabbi Akiva, Rav Huna damar ki Rabbonon, that the difference between their positions is Rav Huna holds like the Rabbonon, and Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon now will be holding like his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. But he's not completely holding like Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva says, Mocher b'ayin yafa mocher. So too a Magdish is Magdish b'ayin yafa. Then why does he differentiate between the trees and the remainder of the items that are here? And the answer is either because the trees are being sustained out of the property That's why they are included in the sale, but a boor, an adult, would not be included in the sale. Or you have to say that he has a differentiated view. Trees belong to the sadeh. And when you're makdish the sadeh, all trees go, with the exception of these unique trees. But in a case where we say that he's makdish ba'an yafa, even these trees go along with it. Boor v'dot, they're not included under the term sadeh. And therefore, even if you want to say that he's selling or being makdish ba'an yafa, boor, dot, and these other items that are in the field, they're not included. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, when you sell, those items aren't included, even if we say that you sell ba'an yafa, because they're not subsumed under the terminology of sadeh. So Rabbi Shimon, holding like Rabbi Akiva, says that mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher, he sells in the most generous manner, and therefore when he granted the property to Hekdesh, they gives everything to Hekdesh, including the property underlying these trees. And given that, your trees are now deriving their benefit from Hekdesh, and that's why they belong to Hekdesh. And even though normally when someone buys trees, they buy the right to leave the trees there and to be sustained out of the property that's there, it's almost a built-in condition in the contract. If you leave yourself property, obviously you have rights to have them be yonig from that property. But even if you don't have property, in a case where you buy two trees, you have a right to leave those trees there and have them be sustained by the property. So why don't you say the same thing here by Hekdesh, that when he leaves himself the trees, even though they're being sustained from the property of Hekdesh, that is the condition of the sale. The problem here is that on the other side here, there isn't a party. When you have two parties, they can come to an agreement about anything. The one party can buy the trees, and then when he buys the trees, the other party agrees to leave the trees there and let them be sustained out of his property. Or vice versa, when you sell the land and you maintain the trees, he says, I'm going to keep the property in order that the trees have property. So again, by Hekdesh, you can do the same thing. If you're makdish the property, you can makdish it in a way whereby you retain rights to the karka, and then the trees are yonig. But if you don't maintain the property for yourself, you can't make a condition with Hekdesh that the trees will be sustained out of the property, because Hekdesh, there's nobody on the other side to make that agreement or to come to that agreement. And therefore, it doesn't work in that case. And that's why Rabbi Shimon believes that if we don't have property, then there's no way you can keep these trees, because these trees are being sustained by the property of Hekdesh. And then Rav Huna's din is inside the Shita of the Chachamim, who says that when you give something, you give it in the most miserly fashion, and therefore you maintain the karka rights for yourself. Since you maintain the karka rights for yourself, you're also able to maintain the trees and not have them go along with Hekdesh. So now, there are a couple of things to deal with over here. First of all, when you maintain karka rights for a tree, we're going to see later on in Mocher Tesfina, that you get the property around the tree, you get Kamalei Urav Salah. Did you get the amount of the picker and his basket? That's the property that you leave for yourself. The problem is that we saw earlier in the Masechta that trees' roots sustain the tree up to 16 amot away from the tree. That's a very wide perimeter of space that you need in order to protect your rights of nurturing, or the fact that you're nurturing from your own property, not Hekdesh's property. You need 16 amot wide. Now, Malei Orav Salah just says, I look at the tree, and then I give him a little space around it. That's enough for the picker and his baskets around the tree. That's not getting to 16 amot. So even if you say we leave him property, how does that help you over here? The Baal Tosfot asked that. He gave two answers over here. One answer is that we're talking about these large trees. We're talking about a Stana Shikma and a Charuva Murkav. They have very, very wide branches. Their span is huge. And therefore, their branches might reach 16 amot, and then you get Malei Orav Salah around it, you actually might be covering the 16 amot that you think. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is that, Mocher la'acharim lo kana lokeh chelek chutz lehen kamo sera, avahoch kishneir la'atzmo mishir kol tzorach yinikat ha'ilan. That, what you say in Mocher Sfina, that you only get the property around it of the picker and the basket, that's when you're the buyer. When you're the buyer, we say that's the limited amount of land that you get, is that amount of land. When you are the seller and you're trying to protect your nurturing rights, then maybe you leave for yourself 16 amot. Maybe that's not the governing rule about how much property is left. It's not the Malei Orav Salah, but rather it is the case of 16 amot, because that's what you're trying to protect over here. You're trying to protect Yinikat HaYilan. Yinikat HaYilan is 16 amot. Maybe you leave yourself a much wider perimeter of property. That's the two ways that Tosfot deal with it. Either the branches of this tree extend to 16 amot, or maybe it's different between a buyer and a seller. So that's how he deals with that property. Now, the next thing that we have to deal with is, why over here is the Gemara so reluctant to explain the case of Makdish to fall in a category that is in between? which is that the Gemara assumes here that you only have two paradigms. You have a paradigm of Mecher, and you have a paradigm of Matana. Mecher says that I buy nothing except the field itself. Matana says that you gift everything and leave nothing for yourself. Why can't you have a possibility here that when Rabbi Shimon says a Makdish, it's Makdish the field and the trees, is because he sits somewhere between those two areas. He's not as generous as a gifter, but he's not as miserly as a seller. So then, it's because it's Hekdesh, so I would be more generous. Why can't it be a third category? So both the Rashbam and the Balei Tosfot ask that question. Why is it that the Gemara assumes here that you're either or? So that, you have to explain to Rabbi Shimon. Either he's gifting and he should have gifted everything, or he sold it and he should have sold nothing. So then why are the trees going? Why don't you just say that he's somewhere between? He's not a gifter, so he didn't give everything. But he's also not a seller, so therefore he gave more than a seller. He also gave these trees along with it. It would be an easy solution to the problem to explain the sheet of Rabbi Shimon rather than trying to force him into these two possible paradigms, and that's it. So the Rashbam says over here, Dim Kain, Lav the Mocher Medamile Mikol Bakol, Velo the Metei Matana Medamile Mikol Bakol, El Gtzat Medamile the Mocher, Uktzat Medamile the Matana. So he says that if you do that, then you're going to end up making him a piece of this and a piece of that. And that's not acceptable. And the Rimi Tarei Tzachi, the Rud Bali, just want to say the same thing. Lo by the Shnoi Yachim, Mishum Diedlan, the Dmuy Ekdesh, or the Mecher, or the Matana. Then it's not like any of these. Both of them in the end say that the question is the answer. That the question is, why aren't you? The answer is, because we don't. That is that we have two paradigms, and you have to use the paradigms that are there. We're not going to assume that there's anything that sits between these two paradigms. So as good as the question is, the answer is the question, which is that's the Chachamim were unwilling to establish a third category. And since they don't have a third category, they had to fit them in to those two possibilities. Though the Reeve does back away from that assumption in the end, and it says, Bechazubo Reeve, the Reeve backed away from this, because if that was the case, that you could only have the paradigm of either Matana or Mecher, then you'd have a problem with the Rabbi Shimon's position aligning with Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah. Because if you think that Hektesh is like Matana, everybody agrees by Matana that you give everything. And Rabbi Shimon doesn't believe that. And therefore he says, Umaskana nami fresh, Rabbi Shimon Debrahim de Rabbanon Kamar. In the end, the Gemara also indicates that Rabbi Shimon can hold like the Rabbanon. And that means that he is doing exactly what we are suggesting, that he has something that's an enhanced Mecher. It is not exactly Matana. It's not Mecher, but it's somewhere in between. It's something that's beyond the Mecher. But then why is the Gemara over here bothered by this position of Rabbi Shimon? The answer is because Omari says that the Gemara Shebekdesh Anyafats Femi Mecher Ela Purta, that the Gemara wasn't comfortable with saying that Hekdesh, according to Rabbi Shimon, was much more than Mecher. It was a little better, but Hanulinyam Shimdishilanik Dishna Mikarka, that if you're makdish the tree, along with it goes the land. Afagav de mecher lo machar karka imailan. Even though when you sell the property, the land doesn't go with the tree, and therefore it was too much to assume that ayin yafa over here would be to the point where the person would be makdish the karka underlying the tree. The land underlies the tree or supporting his tree to the point where he would lose his trees. So that's already too much of an ayin yafa, or too far away from mecher. And that's why the Gemara is forced to say that it's in the position of Rabbi Akiva, not the position of the Chachamim, because they only feel that if he was in the position of the Chachamim, his Hekdesh would only be a step above Mecher, not to the point where the person would give up his property rights to his detriment, to the point where he would lose these trees because he was Makdish the property. So Gemara says, Gemara says, Kerabonon, Pshita. According to the Chachamim, of course you leave yourself property because you always give in the most miserly fashion. Nafkamina, what's the nafkamina? Nafsvei hadar shatulahu. That if they fall down, then he has a right to put them back or replant them. So that's the chiddush here that Rav Huna adds into the sheet of the Chachamim, was that you're right. According to the Chachamim, of course you leave yourself property because you always give in the most miserly fashion. So when you gave away the property, you maintain for yourself the property around the trees. That's not a question. So what is Rav Huna telling us? That you left yourself property? Of course you left yourself property. You wouldn't have thought the Chachamim would have said otherwise. So then what's Rav Huna adding? Rav Huna's adding, no. The Chachamim are not saying that you just left yourself property to maintain the trees. He's saying you left yourself property, not just to maintain the trees, but also to replant. so that it gives you rights of continuation. Chodesh Chedesh is that the Chachamim only said you retained the property to keep the trees, meaning that he can't force you to take the trees out right away. But that doesn't mean that you have a right then to replant afterwards. Rav Huna's Chiddush is that when you sell the property and you maintain the trees with it, you maintain the property not only to maintain the trees until they die, you also got the right to replant it. I mean that you keep yourself in perpetuity, you can put trees into this property. That's what the Chiddush of Rav Huna is. The Rashbam explained everything you have to do with Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah. So now in the conclusion of the Gemara, where the Gemara says that there's this difference between Rekiv and the Chachamim, it's clear that the Gemara is looking at Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah. And therefore the Rashbam obviously explained before that the issue of the two trees had to do with Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah, because that is the conclusion of the Gemara. For the Baalei Tosafot, it's very difficult, because the Baalei Tosafot said before, no, the issue of the two trees has nothing to do with Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah. But over here, in the end, the Gemara is clearly differentiating between Rekiv and the Chachamim and saying it does have to do with Ayin Ra'ah and Ayin Yafa. So then, what happened? How did the Gemara change all of a sudden from saying, no, it has nothing to do with it, to doing with it? So that's what the Baalei Tosafot have to explain, and that's what he says over here. V'yesh lomar, ta'ani mile me'ikara, delo yadina ta'ima demigo. We did not know this meaning or the understanding of the Migo in Rav Huna's position. Aval hashta, deshmein and Rav Huna, time of the Migo, once we learned that at the end, then, nacha deshira shayer tzfei karkai me'ilan, then ha'vadai b'nikata ilan mishayer tzfei mi'derech, the kuleyama, she'enu utzea l'kotso l'alter. So what he's saying is that we didn't know this about Rav Huna originally. We just thought that you left over property for yourself. That's what Rav Huna told you. Rav Huna says you don't want to have to get your tree cut down or thrown out of the property, so you keep yourself some property. That's it. At the end of the sugyo, all of a sudden, we learn that Rav Huna is saying to us, there's more to this. There's a migo involved in this, which is that migo that you kept yourself the property to maintain the tree in the property. Beyond that, you also took yourself other rights, which is to plant that area, to put a new tree in if your tree dies. Once we know that, we can come back retroactively and understand Rav Huna's shita is from a migo. Up front, we're not sure what Rav Huna's shita is. We just thought Rav Huna's shita is that you don't want your trees kicked out, so you keep some property. In the end, Rav Huna teaches us that's not it. It's not just I don't want your trees kicked out, but amigo, that you don't want your trees kicked out, you also keep all these other rights with it. But that's only after we get to the end of the sugya. And so that's what the Baalei Tosafot do to explain Rav Huna's addition over here, that Rav Huna is really built on top of the shita of the Chachamim. The shita of the Chachamim is that a person sells in the most miserly fashion. Once you sell in a miserly fashion, you maintain for yourself karka. Okay, now that you maintain for yourself karka, what do I need Rav Huna for at all? Rav Huna says you get karka. Of course you got karka because you maintain that. You don't want your trees kicked out. The answer is Rav Huna teaches you the migo. Once you've kept yourself property, what does that mean? Now I'm going to keep myself a lot of property. Property rights are not simply to leave my tree there. Property rights to plant there. It's property rights to replace the tree there. It means that I'm extending those rights beyond what the Chachamim say in a miserly fashion. So since Rav Huna is layered on top of the Chachamim in Rabbi Akiva, therefore the understanding of the sugya is not about Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah anymore. It has to do with whether you have this Migo or not that Rav Huna includes. Not because of Ayin Yafa and Ayin Ra'ah. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Ayin Aleph Amud Bet.